Guadalcanal to Tokyo. My life in the United States Marine Corps, World War II, 1942 to 1945, by Hiram T. Quillen, Jr. To my wife, Lillian O'Neill Quillen, and my three children, Hiram III, James, and Judy. Forward. Some of you boys are church-going, and some of you have only been to church when your moms had you christened. In this platoon, no one is going to church. We're going to spend Sunday doing more training and getting ready for the coming week. Platoon Sergeant Lamb on the first day of boot camp, February 1942. Sergeant Lamb, true to his word, drilled, trained, and exercised the platoon for almost 6 weeks, and everyone was getting a little salty. We were just ending our rifle range training the evening an unsuspecting Hiram Quillen, fresh from the sick bay recovering from measles, was assigned to the 217th to complete boot camp. Little did he know how that night would initiate him into the glorious platoon 217, and little did I realize how several months of his humor would help me laugh through the early days of World War II and create a friendship that would last a lifetime. When Hiram arrived, Sergeant Lamb was home on leave, and the assistant drill instructor was in command. This DI gave us a choice of going to a movie or staying in the barracks and writing letters. Realizing he had made a mistake and that he couldn't keep an eye on us in two places at the same time, he rescinded the choice and ordered everyone to go to the movies. When the belly aching started, he volunteered our services to the mess sergeant and marched the platoon to the mess hall where we washed and polished the pots and kettles. After 4 hours, the metal was steel wool polished and shining like silver, but our metal was rankled. Annoyed that our free evening was filled with pot scrubbing, the platoon voiced its disapproval at lights out. As soon as the assistant DI closed the door to his quarters, the ruckus began. Almost everyone on the top bunks screamed and yelled. The guys on the bottom bunks banged their wash buckets on the floor, while our new boot just prayed he didn't end up in irons. Lights turned on. Dead silence. The DI firmly warned us to shut up or go to the brig. As soon as the door closed and the lights turned off, we hollered and clanged louder than before. Furious, the DI ordered, "Hit the deck! Everyone out of the barracks on the double!" We lined up in formation and listened to him rant and rave. And then the sergeant in charge of the platoon in the next barracks came running out to give his opinion. March the platoon to the brig. Knowing that the ramifications of this decision would affect everyone's record, they instead concocted a more reasonable punishment for our insubordination. We marched across the road to a marshy area where they had us form a large circle. Then they started running us so long that some of the men started to collapse from exhaustion. As the men dropped, the DI and the sergeant ordered, "Don't break your stride. Step on the fallen men if you have to." After 4 men collapsed, they decided that we had learned our lesson and marched us back to the barracks. To my surprise, the sick bay recruit was still on his feet. "Hiram, welcome to the 217th. Ready to graduate from boot camp, everyone was chafing to get assigned to an outfit they thought they would like, but the Corps had its own idea. We seemed to be destined to more pot walloping. From boot camp, most of the 217th went to the main station mess duty at Paris Island for 1 month, which was an unusual amount of time. Believe me, that turned out to be worse than boot camp. From 5 in the morning to 10 at night, we mopped mess hall floors the size of 2 basketball courts, set tables before anyone arrived to eat, not one kept out of line, we used fishing line to align everything, served all 3 meals, and of course walloped more pots. During these duties, I laughed and listened to the tales of the poor country boy from Huntsville, Alabama. Poor country boy, he'd love you to believe he milked cows in the country rather than supervise gas stations in town. When he and Roy Patterson from Blue Ridge, Georgia spun their tales, more honeysuckle and grits oozed from their stories than the state produced. They had you believing that they were country mice come to the big city Marine Corps, when really, they were more clever than some of the more city mice who ran the show. Their fleet, wry humor made you forget your dishpan hands and lightened the grunt work. While we were on mess duty, the 5th Defense Battalion had returned from Iceland, and they were all given leave. Upon their return, most of us were assigned to that battalion to fill their ranks, and Hiram and I got assigned to special weapons. First the 30 caliber machine gun group, then the 50 caliber machine gun group. We were trained to disassemble and assemble them blindfolded. Hardly cow milking duty. After 1 week in Liberty, we were sent to Hilton Head for advanced machine gun training, then back to Paris Island. On July 4, 1942, we left Paris Island by train to Norfolk, Virginia, and boarded the Dutch ship Bloemfontein. That's when my buddy really had problems. Only nominal Hiram hijinks aboard that vessel. He was seasick before we left the dock, and he stayed that way until we landed in New Zealand. From New Zealand, we shipped to the canal, Guadalcanal, and from there to Tulagi. As a special weapons group, we were assigned to build defense perimeters and fend off sea invasion for the 2nd Raider Battalion on Guadalcanal. Hiram and I were each in charge of a gun crew. But Hiram was having personality problems with one fellow. When the captain asked for volunteers to operate the CB's cat bulldozer, Hiram quickly suggested his nemesis, only to discover that the guy really could handle a machine like a pro. Hiram did get the upper hand for a few days, though. While we were on the canal, certain field promotions were announced. Hiram pretended to have been promoted and informed his nemesis that from now on he would have to take Hiram's orders. For several days, Hiram had the fellow filling sandbags with more coral than sand and digging the machine gun nest. The fellow did eventually discover Hiram's prank. Enough said. One of my favorite stories happened on Tulagi. I had a gun outpost away from the main body while Hiram had been assigned to main station. One Sunday, I was dressed in sack-pressed khakis to go to Mass, heading through the main camp to get there. On the way back from Mass, I ran into Hiram, and we stopped to compare notes. As we talked, Hiram noticed Captain Pete Marchant washing his laundry with a fire under the 10 bucket, stirring boiling clothes like a witch. Hiram called to the captain, making derogatory remarks about my so-called spit-and-polish appearance. The captain replied, "Hiram, that's a good Marine," and turned around to continue doing his laundry. Another friend, Gunny, joined us while the captain was hanging up the wash. Gunny was an old-timer by our standards, with 4 years in the Army, but he was still jittery around the brass. Knowing this, Hiram casually drawled in a stage whisper, "Gunny, what's that you said? The captain has nicotine stains on his skivvies?" The captain whipped around and snarled, "What did you say, Gunny?" While poor Gunny was spitting and stammering, trying to explain himself, we two were laughing hysterically. Suddenly, the captain realized that Hiram maneuvered both Gunny and him. "Hiram," he shouted, "I'll get you for this." But he never did. Not long afterwards, Hiram was shipped out with a number of officers and men in bad condition from malaria. We always kept in touch, though. In fact, Hiram visited my folks in Astoria, New York, several times. Their home was located on 2nd Street, next to the East River, but it was a tricky place to get to, as no public transportation passed within a mile. A Staten Island Marine Corps buddy tried 3 times to visit, but only the poor country boy from Huntsville tracked them effortlessly. My father remembered spying a loping figure and decided that he must be my friend from Alabama. Nobody in New York had a walk like that. My father made an impression on Hiram as well. While visiting my parents, Hiram had an attack of malaria. Concerned and noticing the symptoms resembled a bad cold with the fever and the shakes, my father offered him a shot of whiskey. Figuring the shot would get rid of the chills, my father never realized that the shot could get rid of Hiram. But shots of whiskey, malaria, seasickness, pot walloping, skivvy stains, bulldozers, even World War II couldn't suppress Hiram. He was present at the first offensive on Guadalcanal, and he was present at the Japanese surrender. Now all his irrepressible humor is collected in this book of Marine memoirs, from the glorious 217th to Guadalcanal to Tokyo Bay. We've remained good friends for over 50 years. Why? Our inherent pride and respect for the Corps and for the country, but mostly because of the camaraderie and laughter. I still call him every now and then, just to hear an old friend and to get a few laughs. I'm very proud to still be his friend. Semper Fidelis. Thomas Monk Adams, former New York City policeman. Acknowledgements. I want to thank my wife and John Pruitt, sports editor of the Huntsville Times, for encouraging me to finish this book I started 10 years ago. I want to thank John for giving me permission to use his column of April 27, 1988 in the Huntsville Times. Thanks to my grandson, Hiram T. Quillen IV, and my daughter, Judy Q. King, for their many hours of typing. Thanks to Buell and Francis Case for the pictures they made of Bull, who was on the cover and the end of this book, and to Andy Quillen for loaning us Bull. Thanks to my friend Captain Willis Watts, U.S. Navy retired, for the good advice he gave me. Thanks to Stephen Broyles for his guidance and expertise in putting this book together. Thanks to the New York Times and the Reader's Digest for the articles used in this book.